You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community culture, and everything in between. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the new console launches. Well, mainly about one, but still. We're also going to talk about Twitch owning up to the DMCA issues, and Amazon is looking to group together toxic players. This is episode number 29, and we are recording for the week of November 9th, 2020. That is right. Still the week of November 9th, 2020. This is our second episode this week, technically speaking. The reason being is that we normally, you know, obviously release on Mondays, but we're actually going to be releasing on Fridays going forward. At least that's the goal, to release on Fridays going forward, because we record on Thursdays anyway, right? We record on Thursdays regardless, so it'll just streamline the process if we just release the very next day, as opposed to me being lazy and having three extra days to edit it. Okay. So, yes, I am Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender, the scourge of Ironforge, an official Microsoft shill, Nick Zelenkevich.
I don't think I warrant that title anymore. I didn't get an Xbox, so I don't know if I can say that I'm a shill anymore. I'm not living up. Well, I'm not practicing what I preach.
Technically speaking, a lot of people didn't get Xboxes, okay?
But in my defense, I didn't try.
Exactly. Like, that's the same thing. I didn't pre-order an Xbox or a PS5. I was going to see if I can order a PS5 today and just whenever it came. Can't even do that. Places won't let you do it. Because, I mean, I'd be fine with that if I was just like, okay, well, let me just buy it. Or pre-order it or buy it, and then when it comes, it comes. If it comes in December, January, I'm fine with that. That's the thing. But it's they're not doing that, and probably understandable, because I know a lot of people are probably really trying to get this for Christmas. But if that was the case, why didn't you pre-order it? But then again, I guess they also have problems with the pre-orders, but it just sucks for people who want to get this as a Christmas gift to somebody. I would never put that amount of pressure on myself.
Well, you've still got some time before Christmas. I mean, I know, you know, it's kind of haphazard as far as when things will be shipping out necessarily and when things might be made available, but you're not up against the wall there. I feel bad for the people who had ordered, there were reports of people who had ordered Xboxes, or I think I saw it more today with PlayStations, where they were like, okay, like, my PlayStation should be here tomorrow on launch day, and then all of a sudden they get a notice like, oh, no, it's shipping in like a week. And it's just like, yeah, the supply chains are all messed up.
Shipping in a week, they would be lucky. There's a lot of people who got noticed today that their order was canceled.
Yes.
There's a lot of people who got noticed today that that would be crushing. Crushing. You know? Pour one out for those people, because that really, really sucks. I saw a ton of notices, especially from Amazon specifically. Yeah. From Amazon, a lot of people saying that, we were unable to fulfill your order, so now we're going to cancel it. I'm like, But then again, it's kind of like, you know, no console launch is worth the hassle of getting a console at launch.
Yes.
There never has been. Except, you know what? There was only one that I can think of, and that's the Nintendo 64, because of Mario 64.
See, I was going to say the Wii, just because of like...
The Wii?
Yeah, because of Wii Sports and
Twilight. That's all hype.
That's all hype?
It's all hype. Wii Sports isn't that great of a game. It was fun to play, kind of, but like, how many? There were so many dusty Wiis after the first few months of the Wii being out. You know, that was it. It was all hype, man.
Well, I still pop it in hype from time to time.
Well, you're a special person, Nick. Plus, you have kids and a family.
Yes,
so you have more of a reason. But yeah, I mean, the only console I can think of that was probably worth the hassle at launch was like the 64 because Mario 64 was such a great game, especially at that time. But even that didn't have a great launch lineup, you know? The Dreamcast had an okay launch lineup, and that touted how many, like, it had those commercials with all the different games that they were going to have, mm-hmm. just not at launch, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, no console, in my opinion, has ever been worth the hassle of a console launch.
You're paying for the privilege of being able to say, I have a console, and maybe post pictures to social media showing your console, and hopefully it's pictures of your console working and not doing other things.
Yeah. Now I would say I gotta put this out there. I'd probably be more excited about a console launch if I only had like a PS4 or an original Xbox One, right? But if you have a PS4 Pro, like I have a PS4 Pro, and I'm gonna talk about it in a second, but I played Spider-Man last night. It looks great. It plays great. The only difference that I can really see between the two in most cases is the frame rate difference. That's it. I know that the new Spider-Man, I think it also utilizes ray tracing as well, but I mean, unless you're in an area that has a bunch of reflective surfaces, I don't find it too appealing, but that's just me. And I do play with RTX on, so yes, I do know the difference. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, so if I only had like a PlayStation 4 or an original Xbox One, then yeah, I think I'd be like super hyped for this. Got to get the PS5, so I can understand that a bit more. And especially, I guess maybe this launch is a little different too, because it does play your previous catalog games, and some of them come with upgrades, so you have an upgraded experience, or just even the ones that don't get upgraded can still play a bit better because the hardware is better, right?
Right. I mean, so, I remember when my roommate at the time got a PS2, and we were putting in all the different PS1 games to be like, look at that, oh, it looks so much better. And I'm like, in hindsight, it probably did not look that much better, but
it just probably performed better. That's the thing, it probably just performed better. So,
but yeah, I think we've come a long way in terms of at least stuff you can do with your console when you first plug it in and get it, because yeah, I mean remember back in the day where if you were lucky you got the console and one game, and that was the only game you could play on it, so you better like that game.
Yeah. So shout out to everybody who managed to get a PS5 and didn't get it canceled. I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of people on Twitch right now playing Spider-Man on the PS5, quote unquote, are not actually playing it on the PS5. I have a sneaking suspicion about it. I'm seeing a lot of people who are playing it at 30 FPS. I'm like, why would you have a PS5 and only play Spider-Man at 30 FPS?
I wonder if maybe there's some Twitch setting somewhere that they don't realize that they're downscaling there.
There's a possibility. Yeah. There's a possibility. They're also like they may be used to streaming at 30 frames.
Right.
And maybe that's it. But like a couple of the ones I went to had 1080p 60 source. That's what it had. Mm. So yeah. Mm. Waiting for that to unravel.
Maybe
which will probably, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Maybe they just really like playing at 30 frames per second, like, this is my jam.
Well, there is something to be said to play at 30 frames per second, to be honest with you. It is, but I don't want to get too deep into that conversation right now. Nick, how's your week been going? Your Xbox-less week.
It's been going well. The thing that I'm stymied by most is today they updated Hearthstone. They put in like a season pass type progression system.
A battle pass?
Yeah. And I don't Good. Quite, I mean, I've had battle passes before. I mean, I've used the Destiny battle pass, Crash Team Racing had like a battle pass type system, but like, well, Destiny, I check in and out of often enough that it's like, yeah, okay, I come in and the whole thing's redone or whatever, and I just adjust.
Right, yeah.
And like Crash Team Racing, they put it in. There wasn't anything there before. So I just pick up the system from scratch. Whereas here, it's like, I'm used to like the monthly advancement. Like, yeah, I do my ranks. I suck, you know, and I don't pay like super attention to my game. So I hover around like the floor for advancement. And, you know, I just, you know, I slowly rack up my wins. And now I'm like, there's so many things to do and I don't understand. And I mean, I got to play the duels, which that's now available for everybody today. That's still in early access, but you don't need to pre-order the expansion pack to get access to that now. It's just available to everybody. So I can check out the duels, which that's fine and all, but I got quests for that. There's achievements now, which are annoying because I know I'm going to try to do them and I don't want to get distracted doing the achievements for, like, I felt I had enough on my plate just trying to get 500 wins with every class, and then they upped it to 1,000 wins with every class. And now they're like, you know, go on streaks with a class and do all this other stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to get involved in that. This is too much, but I don't know. I'm sure it's all good. I'm sure it'll be fun for the game. And enough of it is still free to play that it should be fine. I know, like, if basically it looks like if you pay to actually buy the pass, then you just get some extra custom avatars for your characters and appearances and whatnot. So nothing to pay to win there, but I don't know. Maybe I didn't like do my homework enough to know what was coming here. I guess that's good because, you know, like doing like a World of Warcraft podcast where it's like, I'm in the weeds on that. I know everything that's going on with the game, even the stuff I don't touch. Like, you know, so it's like, oh, like, you know, you talk to somebody and you're like, yeah, what do you think about, like, they made this, you know, like 2% change to crit for Death Knights. And they're like, I don't know. I just like, you know, Jaina or whatever. And you're like, oh, okay. Like,
right.
You know? And it's like, oh no, like it's good to have those other games where you're not as into it as you are for, you know, like your main game where it's like, you know, you're the guy where it's like, you know, like you're not following it on Twitter to keep up with all the updates. You log in and if they tell you something happened, then you know. And otherwise, if you don't, you don't. And yeah, I'm just, I don't know. I just feel off. I feel uncomfortable, I guess. Like I'm just not ready for this. And so it'll take some adjustment, but overall it looks like a nice system. I'm sure it's great.
Yeah. I'm a fan of battle passes, and this is the reason I'm a fan of battle passes, right? Let's be real. Games are cheaper than they're supposed to be right now in terms of the cost of development. I mean, we just read something about this a couple weeks ago. The cost of development has risen, but the price of games has not. And the reason they know they can't raise the price of games that much. Like, even right now, like, certain PS5 games are testing the water with costing $70. Like Dark Souls Remastered, I would not pay $70 for that game. It just wouldn't happen for me, you know? And I think, like, was like 2K, NBA 2K also is like $70. So they're toying around with it. But I think battle passes are a good way, even in games that you pay for, you know, like Destiny, they're a good way to get that extra revenue that you know that they need. You know, and on top of that, it's not random like loot boxes. You just have to play. You just have to play the game in most cases. So for right now, and most battle passes I've seen implemented well, you know. So yeah, you know, I think they're fine. So
yeah, I think it's just gonna take me some getting used to, but I'll make do. So how has your week been?
You know, I also am console-less this week, or new console-less this week, but I actually got into three different games, not one, but three different games this week. I found, two I knew were coming out. Obviously, like I knew the Falconeer was coming out. I knew Spider-Man Miles Morales was coming out and I was going to play those. But on Monday, it's Steam fucking got me again. I cannot go to the front page of fucking Steam. I can't. They know me too well. And I go to the front page of Steam, and this game is there. Proteus. It's there. And it's a shooter, so I just click the button. I'll go look at it. And it looks fucking cool. It's basically, it's an arena shooter. Single-player arena shooter, so think Doom. And it's built out of, like, sprites. But it also uses, like, newer rendering technology. So it looks newish, but the enemies are still sprites. And the weapons are still sprites. So, like, when you reload a weapon, like, you remember that game, like, Area 51? Not even Area 51. Like, it does look like old Doom or Duke Nukem when you, like, reload the gun or something like that. But it's like, super fast-paced. I mean, I have not played the Doom expansion yet. Doom Eternal expansion, which I've been meaning to go back to, but this game actually reinvigorated me to go do it. And it's an early access title, so I think it's like $25 right now, but I was so surprised because it looks like it's almost done. Like, there's some menu items in it that you can tell, like, that there's just placeholder text or fonts and stuff like that, but the game's, it's fun to play, has good level design. I want to know who has the sound, who did the sound design for the game. Because one, the soundtrack is actually pretty good. And then two, the sound design for the weapons, like when you're shooting somebody's like head off, it sounds like you're fucking blowing their head off. I guess it definitely fits. So I streamed it on Monday. So if you're listening to this, you probably have like another week to go check it out. If you want to see the streams, there's new twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. And you can see what the game actually talking about. But if you are into first person shooters and you have a PC, I recommend it. It's a really cool game. But then Tuesday, the day right after that, that's when the Xbox came out. But for me, that's when the Falcon Air came out, because I knew I wasn't getting an Xbox on launch. So I bought the Falcon Air and I played that. And yeah, people just don't make these arcadey fight style, like fight combat games anymore. And this was one of them, but like it has a bit of a twist because you're not in airplanes, you're on the back of like a Falcon, essentially, right? That's why it's called the Falcon Air. So, you know, you have like stamina for the bird and things like that. And it can kind of stop in midair and make sharp turns. And you basically have like a gun that you ride on his back with and shoot shit. And yeah, I will say the controls for the combat controls are a little looser than I expected. So it does take some practice and you do have to aim. There actually is effort and skill there, but yeah, I'm enjoying that game. It did start off kind of slow. And sometimes the missions have areas where you're just kind of flying for a long time. And I'm not sure how I feel about that, but the game looks good. The sound design is good. It's fun. And I'm looking forward to finishing that. And, Spider-Man Miles Morales, that I was like, oh, I wasn't even hyped for the game, to be perfectly honest with you. I actually did not pre-order the game until the day of, which, oh, by the way, for those looking who, if you have a PS4 right now, but you want to make sure when you get your PS5, you not only have Miles Morales, but you also have Spider-Man Remastered. The way you do that is, if you download it digitally, right? And you go to the PS4 store, the Ultimate Edition is not there because there is no Ultimate Edition for PS4. What you would have to do is either, I think if you buy the Ultimate Edition for the PS5 in store, like at a Best Buy or Target, I think it comes with a code for the PS4 version. Or what you have to do is you actually have to go to the PlayStation website, sign in with your PSN credentials, buy the PS5 Ultimate Edition digitally, and then you'll have it on your PS4 as well. So that's how I got around it. At first, I was actually going to be a little pissed. I was like, well, now I have to wait because there's no way I'm buying this game without getting the remastered as well. It just doesn't make sense for me not to do that. So yeah, once I found that out, I was actually pretty happy. I was like, cool. But yeah, this game is, they did a great job again with the intro. Because if you didn't play the original Spider-Man or Marvel Spider-Man from like 2018, I think it was, it starts off with you basically raiding Kingpin's skyscraper. That's how the game starts. And this one starts with you with Rhino escaping. Rhino and a bunch of prisoners escaping. Like, this is happening within the first 5 minutes of the game. And you hit the ground running. It's a really fast training on how to do, you know, a lot of the combat maneuvers and stuff like that. But it gets started right away. It's incredibly cinematic. Like, incredibly cinematic. It's like a movie. It's better than a movie. I'm sorry. It is. You know, the only thing I could really match this is an animation. I don't even see how they'd be able to achieve stuff like this in a live action movie, you know? So Nick's doing a lot of head shaking. I hope you guys are too. listening to the podcast. He's like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah. But yeah, like it's like super cinematic, and I don't know. Just the part where you switch from, because Peter Parker's in the game in the very beginning, and when you're kind of tag teaming him, you're tag teaming not Peter Parker, you're tag teaming Rhino, and when you get to the part where you kind of split paths and go separate ways, that intro, I don't want to give away what happens, but that intro is just like really cool. Like going into the city at night and swinging around with what's happening is actually I thought was pretty dope. So they did a good job there. And I don't know, man, like I'm actually enjoying this game more than the original Marvel Spider-Man, to be perfectly honest with you. That's what it feels like. I mean, maybe it's because this is, I think this is our first game with Miles Morales. I think this is our first Spider-Man game with Miles Morales. So it does feel kind of new, right? Like when you get into a Spider-Man game, you know a bunch of people. You know Aunt May. You know Mary Jane. You know a bunch of enemies. You know Dr. Octopus. You know Vulture. You know all these people because they've been in the, you know, in Spider-Man games before. And I've been playing Spider-Man games for 30 years, you know. So, you know all these people. And when it comes to Miles Morales, I mean, the enemies really haven't changed. Like, I haven't seen any brand new enemies. Well, actually, there is at least one. But, you know, like, dealing with him dealing with his family, his friends, there's new characters. It just feels more fresh, right? But in terms of the game itself, I mean, the game itself is definitely, it's Spider-Man. I imagine that when they first started developing this, it was meant to be standalone DLC. Like, you know, that's what that's what it feels like, because the map is the same. It's still Manhattan. You know, the map is the same. A lot of the move, the web swing is the same. A lot of the traversal is the same. The combat is the same for the most part. Now you have some new powers, you know, you have some new abilities and stuff like that. So it's good. I think I'm already halfway through it. It's supposed to be like somewhere between 8 to 10 hours, and I played 4 hours last night. So wasn't really planning on it, but I started it as soon as like around midnight or something like that. And then I'm like, oh, what time is it? Oh, 4:30. Great. Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, I've been having a good week, Nick. It's been a good week.
Good.
I can't complain. So, let's go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's how they all should be.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're about to talk about some people who can complain. And we're talking about these Xbox Series X launch day issues. But before we do that, I'd like to thank and welcome any returning listeners, and also give a special thank you to first time listeners. Welcome to the Mashes Button Show. And I'll give a very special thank you to our supporters on both Patreon and Twitch. And if you want to know when we go live, you can follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. You can also follow us at Twitter at twitter.com/themashnetwork. And if you want to join us on our Discord, that would be awesome. We're at mash.gg/discord to come talk to me and Nick and you know, other people in our community, and you know, it's a friendly bunch, so don't be afraid to hop in. But let's get into these Xbox Series X launch day issues. So I don't know how widespread this is, but it is enough that it caught the media's attention. Well, first of all, the first thing that happened on launch day is Xbox Live went down. First thing that happened, which that's just unfortunate. But also, some users are experiencing technical issues with the Xbox Series X, particularly the disk drive. It's making like whirling noises, it's making clicking noises, or it's not accepting game discs. So people are having issues with their new Xboxes, and that just sucks, because I mean, especially in the launch window, you know, quantities are limited anyway. You know, like, you're not going, it's not like you're going to call them up and they're going to send you a new one and then have you send the old one back. They're going to say, okay, well, box that up, send it to us, and then we'll fix it maybe and then send it back to you, or we'll ship you a different one. But that puts you in a situation where, I mean, that process can take weeks. It really sucks. Like when, you know, this reminds me of like the 360 when people were having those red ring issues, you know, it could take weeks to get a brand new Xbox. And it just sucks because you got it on launch day and you can't even play it, you know?
Do we know what percentage of people had the red ring issues? Because you're right, this feels exactly like that, where it's just unfortunate, but, you know, you're buying hardware at launch, and, you know, like, you know, obviously, like, this stuff is just being released, so it hasn't been put through all its paces yet, and I'm sure that even then, Microsoft has, like, an acceptable rate of failure that they're willing to deal with.
Right.
You know, and whereas, you know, so everybody's getting it up front, whereas, you know, now, you know, once the console's been out, and, you know, this will get peppered out throughout the lifetime, it's not as noticeable if somebody buys, you know, just a single, you know, shoddy Xbox. Yeah, like, because that's the one thing I wonder is, if this is about the acceptable rate of failure, Microsoft never said exactly how many units they were going to be shipping. They, you know, like Sony said, I think their goal was like 10 or 11 million. that they'd have available. I don't think Microsoft gave like a hard number. They just gave like a breakdown of like how many people, like what percentage of orders were for the S and what percentage were for the X, stuff like that. And so it's hard to say, like, just skimming social media, like how many people are reporting this and how many consoles might be out there to like, is this a, you know, a big percentage, or is this just a handful of people? And now that everybody has social media, you put that up there, it's going to get attention, even if, you know, even if it's an edge case and it's not really warranted. So yeah, I hope that it's not that big a deal. I think the bigger problem, as we talked about, is just people not even getting the consoles. So who knows how many orders that Amazon didn't fill that would have been sending them, you know, shoddy consoles anyway.
Right. Well, I know a lot of people who are getting the Xboxes are getting them actually this weekend, because a lot of places did not ship until Tuesday. You know, I know Amazon is one of those places that tries to get it to you on launch day, but a lot of places don't ship until it's released. So I think after this weekend, you know, maybe when we do our show next week, we'll do like a check-in and see if there's a lot more people having this issue, and we'll see. I mean, it could just be unfortunate that maybe a bad batch of Xboxes, you know, got shipped out. But I just feel for those people, because, like, you know when a launch, like when a new console breaks. I'm going to say 8 weeks. It's easily 8 weeks. And during the pandemic, that's without the pandemic. You know, it could take 8 weeks for you to get a new one because it's such limited supply, unfortunately.
And on the one hand, it's like you're not missing out on much, because like we pointed out, it's the launch and there's really not much to do on the console aside from the handful of launch games, which I'm sure, you know, they might be good, but you can always go back and play those. But it's, on the other hand, it's like, this is a special time. Like, you're missing out on, like, you know, everybody's getting through Spider-Man or whatnot, and you can't, you know, be part of the conversation. And especially, you paid to be part of that conversation. You put in for that experience, and you're not getting that. So, well, that does suck.
To get a pre-order, not only did you have to pay for it, because you did get charged at this point if you got it, you also like had to fight through the hordes of people online trying to get a pre-order and stuff like that. That's rough, man. It just makes you angry, you know. So we'll see what happens. And we're recording this on the 12th, so the PS5 just came out today. So we'll see if anybody, if anything, you know, comes from that, from the PlayStation side. But yeah, there are people having issues with the Xbox. Some people were making stuff up, though, right? So there are a few people who were vaping into their Xbox to make it look like it was smoking. I don't know why. And then on top of that, originally somebody vaped into their Xbox to make it seem like it was smoking, like it was an issue. But then when people found out that they were just vaping, because Microsoft showed how it works, because they wanted to show people that these Xboxes aren't smoking on their own, then people started vaping into the fucking Xbox to get the effect. I'm like, Jesus Christ, would a meteor just hit this planet already?
I think that what Microsoft is learning is that there is a market for add-on effects, that, you know, you can get a kit that should let your Xbox smoke, you know, just put it on, especially the thing's large enough, just put a little, you know, like maybe like an inch thing, just, you know, makes it like an inch wider. It's not going to matter because the thing's built like a house anyway. And then it'll just let it, you know, like shoot smoke out all day. And you know, maybe, you know, I'm sure people rig like LEDs all over it so it lights up and stuff. Like, you know, let people go crazy with the aftermarket decorations on their Xbox.
How about, yeah, no, like, it's, no, would you please stop vaping into the console hardware? Thank you very much. But so yeah, people were making some stuff up as well, but luckily, let's see, we'll see what happens in the next week. We'll see if there's like a big, I'm expecting this weekend, a lot of people are going to get their Series X and S's, and, well, I think we'll know next week if this is a widespread issue or not. And even if the PS5 is going to be having issues. Speaking of PS5, next week, Kurabara is going to be on the show. He's going to talk about his experience with the PS5. He got one. He got one today. And he's one of the few people not playing Spider-Man. He's playing like Demon Souls or something like that right now. But yeah. But in more in Xbox talk, there was an article in GamesIndustry.biz that talks about the Xbox Series S does not hold back the next generation. It advances it. And this is kind of something that I think I've echoed on this show, you know, and I just love when the media proves me right. So I like reading about it. Nick is smiling right now. I gotta commentate that stuff to let you know I am getting a reaction on this side. Okay, I'm not just laughing about it myself.
I'm just letting you talk. You're in the flow. Keep going. I'm not interrupting.
Yeah. So I'll just read a bit from it. It says, launching yesterday alongside the more powerful Series X, the $299 digital-only console is not too far off from the discontinued Xbox One X in terms of performance, albeit with next-gen features with quick resume and faster loading times enabled by solid-state drive. Given the smaller differences in technology, Microsoft could have retained the Xbox One X as an entry-level device, but system architect Andrew Gosen told Digital Foundry why the platform holder pushed forward with the low-end console. One factor is that the Xbox One X would have lasted a long time through the new generation, but will lack aspects Microsoft believes defines its new devices, such as the Xbox Velocity architecture and graphical features such as ray tracing and variable rate shading. Here's a quote. We want to make sure that there is an entry level at every right price point so that we could really advance the generation rather than hold it back. I've heard that the Series S is going to hold back the next generation, but I actually see the Series S advancing it because by doing Series S, we'll have more games written to the characteristics of the next generation. And based on some other things in the article, they said it looks like they wanted the Xbox One X to be cheaper, or at least they expected it to get cheaper to produce, but they couldn't actually achieve that, which is why they made the S. So in my original prediction was that they were going to take the Xbox One X, make that $300. Take the Xbox. Actually, sorry. No, that wasn't my original prediction. My original prediction was that they were going to have the Xbox One X stay at $400. They were going to have the Xbox One, the middle console, the Xbox One S, go to $500. And then they would have the Xbox Series X at $600. That was my original prediction. But still, I thought that the Xbox One X would be the actual entry-level console. But they kind of flipped that, and when they brought out the Series S, and that was only $300. And that being said, that the One X right now is still $400, and the Series S is $300. I do believe I guess it has to be something with the production of the unit that makes it cheaper than the Xbox One X, because it is slightly better, but it's cheaper. So there has to be something with production that's doing that, because if Microsoft could take the Xbox One X and make it $200, they would. They absolutely would, because they want to make it accessible. They've done everything in their power to make it accessible to get in the Xbox ecosystem. And so there's no doubt in my mind that if they could make it $200, they would. But there's no point for them to drop the the Xbox One X down to $300 when you already have a $300 console that's actually slightly better, you know? But yeah, I mean, I never thought the Series S was going to hold back. And even when you see reports of people saying that it's going to hold the console generation back, like, no, it's not. It's bringing people up to, you know, playing games on SSD. You know, it's bringing ray tracing and stuff like that as well. So at the very least, the games can do that and maybe just not keep a 60 FPS, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, if ray tracing wasn't really a thing, I'm pretty sure that the Series S wouldn't exist, because they probably would have just kept the Series X, the One X alive, if that was the case. So you know, so that and a couple other things I'm paraphrasing here, but yeah. So yeah, I mean, I do appreciate that they have the Series S, and not only does it make it so that it pushes the generation along, it makes it easier to get into the new console generation than almost anything else that's out there. When was the last time we had a $300 console available on launch? I can't think of it.
How much? How much was the Wii when that launched?
The Wii wasn't next gen, though. It wasn't next gen. It wasn't. Was the Wii $200 or was it $300? I can't remember.
I think it might have been. It was either $299 or it might have been. No, I don't think it was $350. I think it was $399 or $299. I think it was $300.
Yeah. But that was a next gen. But you wanted to say something? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so do we think then at some point is Microsoft's strategy going to be at some point, like, I guess what would typically be like midway through the console cycle, just like we had the Xbox One X, that we'll get, I guess, the Xbox Series X or whatever, like the next step up, and then they'll drop the Series X down to, that'll be the $300 console, and then the Series S will just get cut off, and then they'll just constantly have the one underpowered, one overpowered console, and at any given time you're paying more of a premium price for the overpowered console, presumably. And then again, like at the what would be the start of the next gen, then presumably the XX would drop down and be the entry level at 300, and then whatever, you know, the Xbox, you know, whatever, I guess XXX at this point, going by the but that would be, you know, your $500 console.
Yes, that's exactly what I think is going to happen. The console generations are over. They are over. They're done. Finished. There's no reason to have console generations. Even this one right now, it's like Microsoft made it so easy. Like, you know, they worked really hard for backward compatibility and things like that with their games and all their titles right now, that you are literally just switching hardware, right? You're not moving from one generation to the next. You're not like taking one console out, packing up that console and its games, you know, and moving on to the next ones. You're not doing that. You keep your library exactly the same way it is, and you can play both. That's what Microsoft did, and they did it. They did it well. And I'm sure Sony's going to follow suit soon with their next console as well. And I'm not talking about the pro version of the PS5. Whenever they have the PS6, I imagine the PS6 will be better suited to play PS5 games, and the PS5 is better suited to play PS4. And that backward compatibility is already done pretty well. So yeah, absolutely. I 100% think that's what's happening right now.
What I thought was interesting is Sony released this week the PS4. I think it was the PS5 app for the PS4. So you can stream, like if you have your PS5 in one room, your PS4 in another room, you can play your PS5 games through the PS4. PS4. Like it's, and it's the remote app, so it's not, you're not playing it on the PS4, but you're basically just streaming it through the box. Which,
right.
One, I look forward to that when I do finally get a PS5. But I think that like it's that's just another way that it extends the lifetime of all the other consoles, because then it's like you can have the PS4 or, and I hope that they let it so you can stream the PS4 to the PS5. So it does, like, as long as you have one of the boxes in one room, one box in the other room, you can access any of the games on either box in any room. I think that's kind of that's the direction that we should be heading.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I didn't even think about that, but I can't imagine why they wouldn't allow that, considering that you can stream PS4 to your PC if you wanted to. So. But yeah, it's good things going forward. Let's go ahead and move forward ourselves, and let's talk about this Twitch DMCA again, because Twitch brought it up, and I don't know if they should, because their tweets are definitely getting ratioed. So this article from Ars Technica, and it says Twitch today apologized to users for how it handled a copyright crackdown last month, but the site still told streamers that they have to stop using copyrighted recordings to avoid further takedown notices. Twitch, the popular game streaming site acquired by Amazon for $970 million in 2014, was forced to take more aggressive action on copyright by record labels. But Twitch's mishandling of the crackdown left users in a state of confusion about how the videos violated copyrights and about how users can comply with the rules without simply deleting all of their videos. And in a blog post today, Twitch said that the users have been asking how they can stream without having to worry about DMCA notifications from music cues. The answer is that users need to stop using recorded music in their streams, and if they don't own the copyright and delete videos that have copyrighted music in them. And here's a quote from Twitch. Most importantly, don't play recorded music in your streams unless you own all the rights to in the music, or you have permission of the necessary rights holders. Doing this is the best protection for your streams going forward. If you're unsure whether you own all the rights, it's pretty likely you don't. If you want to include recorded music in your streams, use a fully licensed alternative like Soundtrack by Twitch, or other rights cleared music libraries such as Soundstripe, Monster Cat, Gold, Chill Hop, Gold, Monster Cat, Gold, Chill Hop, Epidemic Sound, and NCS. And then they actually had a little guidance, I put that in quotes, guidance on what to do if your game, if the game you're playing has copyright music. They said, while we haven't received more than a handful of DMCA notifications targeting in-game music, if you're playing games with recorded music in them, we recommend you review their end-user license agreements that wall of text at the beginning of the game to see how the terms cover streaming with that music, Twitch said. One way to do this is to search for a game's official EULA online and then do a control F. Search for words like stream, license, and music to point you toward the correct sections. If you're unsure about the rights, somehow some games allow you to turn off music while streaming, or you can mute the game audio yourself. So the problem I have with that statement right there, you're going to tell each streamer to go to and check the EULA when you, Twitch, can look at the EULA and say, yes, you can stream music here. No, you can't. And we already know the games that have licensed music in them. Indie titles don't have licensed tracks. They don't. You know, you're talking about Grand Theft Auto, Watch Dogs Legion. You know, you're talking about games like that. Tony Hawk, the racing games, you know, AAA racing games have licensed tracks.
Good. When did all of this first blow up? Was it earlier? Was it like a few weeks ago or was it a few months ago? Because I feel like when we saw like the rise of Fall Guys, and like Fall Guys is a great game on its own, don't get me wrong, but that would qualify, I think, as like an indie game that you're talking about, doesn't have any licensed music in it. And you look at that and then Among Us getting huge in the streaming, and again, another indie game. Is there like, are we seeing like the two situations kind of going hand in hand here where it's like, you know, all these games that have music, we kind of got to shy away from them. And even though Twitch didn't issue this order before, I think people kind of, you know, could see what was going on. And then you see a drive to indie games like Fall Guys, like Among Us, that, you know, it's kind of a boon really for the indie developer. Like, you're too poor to afford licensed music. Good for you. That actually helps you out in the future.
Well, that's just for games. What we're talking about now is just for games that have in-game music. The problem is that people will play like, you know, their sound, not their SoundCloud, but like their Spotify or something like that in the background. I know I've done it a bunch of times, but I'm not deleting shit. I'm not. Like, I've done it a bunch of times on the Mashles Button channel, and while I do enjoy having, you know, the stream subscribers and stuff like that, I just do not have time to go back through everything and start deleting stuff, you know?
I think that's the problem here. Even as you point out, like, Twitch knows what games are being played, and I suppose they should appoint somebody like to go ahead and clear, like, you know, the top 20 games at least that are streaming on,
right.
50, like that. That shouldn't be too hard. But, I mean, as we've seen, there's, you know, a plethora of games out there. And to even begin to attack that is going to take some manpower to, you know, and I think the problem here is Twitch doesn't have the personnel for this, at least not yet, that they said like, oh, we were getting a handful per month to getting just inundated with, what did they say, thousands, that, you know, to suddenly get swamped like that in a way that you're not expecting. And it's clear that they've decided, I guess maybe this is what the delay was, whether they had internal discussions, like, do we just ramp up a department? Like, your job is to go and check these out, or do we just dump this on the users because there's no way we can do this? And ultimately, I mean, I've seen like streamers, really there was a podcast I used to, I still listen to them, but I used to, you know, hang out in their stream sometimes. And, you know, before the show, they'd have just some random rock music playing on with a coming soon screen. And I would think, like, how can you do this? Like, this feels like you're going to get in trouble. And I'm surprised it's been, you know, that was like 4 or 5 years ago. I'm surprised that now is when everybody's getting in trouble for that. And I don't think for the podcaster, it really matters, because those shows at this point are long archived, and, you know, Twitch isn't the primary method for consumption of a podcast. Although I guess if it's available for you to go back, you know, that's great. But I mean, Polka Princess that we were talking about a month ago or so?
Yeah.
Where,
well, it's digital. It's Digi Princess.
Well, digital princess. Yes. Yes. But like, again, like, you, I don't know, maybe I just expect more out of people to not be so naive on certain topics, but like the RIAA and all the music industry, they're very sensitive about this kind of stuff. And I'm not surprised. I'm surprised they didn't do this sooner. That it feels like, you know, Twitch was just off in a corner, and they're like, it's like one of those like Prison Break movies where the spotlight's moving around, and all of a sudden it caught on to like Twitch, like, you know, like running around in the yard, and then it's just boom, right on them, all lit up. And it's like, now you're screwed.
So, well, I am also surprised that they didn't do this sooner, but at the same time, Twitch should have prepared for this better, way better than they did, because you know it was coming. You know it was coming. Facebook has prepared for this because you know what Facebook did. Facebook, if you stream, if you're a partner streamer on Facebook, you can play copyrighted music. They have a deal with the RIA and you can play copyrighted music. Now that for now, that's only for partners, but they already said that will come to all streamers on Facebook. That is something that's going to happen. You know,
that's the issue. That's just because Facebook is friends with everyone.
The issue here, but I'm the issue here.
Was that a copyrighted, drum beat?
maybe the issue here is clips, or are clips and highlights, because that's where people get in tech, because really, like, your streams only last for about 2 weeks, you know? So, you know, that podcast you were talking about, after 2 weeks, they're kind of in the clear, you know, but even within those 2 weeks, that part might've gotten muted, because they did that muting thing where if you play music in the background, it'll just mute you. But I really haven't seen the effects of that in a long time. I think they might've abandoned it, but yeah, I mean, Twitch should have prepared for this way better. They should have started enforcing the music stuff before the RIA came knocking at their door. But they waited because there was no way this wasn't going to happen. They knew this was going to happen. And, you know, Amazon actually has a streaming service, right? I don't understand why Amazon cannot work with the RIA to say, hey, if somebody has subscribed to our streaming service, why can't they, you know, allow them to use the music on the streaming service, right? Clear that with the RIA at least. And that's at least a boon for their streaming service, you know? Which actually, now I think about it, because I am like 90% sure Soundtrack by Twitch is actually powered by Spotify. I am pretty sure that is what's happening.
That's, yeah, because didn't we talk about that the interfaces look exactly the same?
The interfaces look exactly the same, right? So I wouldn't be surprised by that. So I don't know why they don't use Amazon streaming service instead of Spotify.
Well, I guess there's two tiers to the Amazon streaming service, and one's free and one's not. And the free one has a lot of songs in it, but there's a handful of songs that you do need the Amazon Music Ultimate for. So
right. So yeah, tell them that if you stream with Amazon Music Ultimate, you can stream whatever you want. And I know there's a lot of moving parts to that statement. Like, I do realize that there's a lot that has to happen there. But all I'm saying is that Twitch should have seen this coming. They should have prepared. They should have. They admitted it. They said, okay, here, I'll read this quote. One of the mistakes we made was not building adequate tools to allow creators to manage their own VODs and clip libraries. You're rightly upset that the only option we provided was to mass delete tools for clips, and that we only gave you 3 days notice to use this tool. We could have developed more sophisticated user-friendly tools a while ago. That we didn't is on us. And we could have provided creators with a longer time period to address their VOD and clip libraries. That was a miss as well. We're truly sorry for these mistakes. We'll do better. And they said Twitch promised to expand the use of technology to detect copyright audio and give users more granular ways to manage your archive instead of just a delete all option. But the site didn't say how long that was going to take. Yeah, I'm sorry, you don't get a pass. Like, oh, we'll do better. Like, no, like, you should have saw this coming from, like, because Twitch has been huge for a long time. A long time. And when you see people, like, you, they should have prepared. They knew it was an issue because they instituted the muting thing. They instituted that muting thing. So instead of, I mean, you could have done that, but you knew it was an issue. So, you know, that wasn't their fix for everything. You should have, you know, created these tools ahead of time.
This sounds like they got those DMCA notices that overwhelmed them. They panicked. They put out those other procedures in a panic. And now that they've had time to think about it and, you know, like, let, you know, calm down and realize, like, the world's not going to end because of this, they're like, oh, okay, this is what we should have done. And actually let's, you know, mea culpa that. And on the one hand, does anyone actually pay for Twitch, like, as a streamer? Because, like, I know you can, like, pay for your subs or whatever, and you get the advertisers and whatnot. But, like, when you're streaming, that's a free service from Twitch. Like, you go on, you know, you get yourself set up with OBS or XSplit or whatever, and, you know, and then you broadcast out to the world. That's all free. So
yeah, nobody pays for that.
Right. So. And so you're not, you know, so it's in a way, it's like it's hard to complain. And I admittedly, like, there are plenty of people for whom like this is their main revenue and source, and this kind of stuff will mess with that, especially when this is your revenue source. You're putting out more content, you know, more clips and more whatnot that are going to be affected by this. And that's really going to hurt you, because then you're spending all your time putting out content anyway. Now you don't have time to go back and then go through that content to curate it as you would need for this. But like, generally for the smaller streamer, if this is a free service, you're not, you know, it's hard to be like, well, the free service was crappy, because at the end of the day, it was free. Like, you can't expect, I mean, you can't expect right. more than, you know, a certain level there. If there was like a premium streaming service or whatever that they offered, you know, then I think you might have a little bit more ground to complain about. And I'm not trying to like say Twitch is absolved of all guilt here because it's free to stream. Like, they should have handled this better. But I think I'm just saying it's a little, you can't get too worked up over it, because
you can 100% get worked up over this,
but not,
you can get worked up. Huh? Yes, you can. You not can too get too worked up.
Not too worked
yes, you
up.
Can. Yes, no. You can.
You can get to like
yes,
a five, not a 10.
No, it can get a 10. It can get a 10 because, you know, while yeah, sure, streaming to Twitch is a free service, but Twitch benefits way more from that service than you ever will.
Yeah.
They run ads and they keep the ad money for the most part. Every sub they get half of, you know, right. You are providing content to their platform. So if you spend 8 hours a day streaming on Twitch just to get by, you know, just to make a living, and then now they just come by and just wash away all your work. This is why I constantly say, I'm doing Donald Trump hands right now. I don't know why. But this is why I constantly say you cannot get too embedded into a platform, because they can change the rules at any given time. YouTube has done this so many times over the years. Every other year, and maybe even every year, we hear YouTubers complain about the change that YouTube has made. You know, Twitch has been, it's been less there, but now I think we're going to also see the same thing. Twitch is going to be making changes that's not going to be friendly for the streamers. It's going to be more for Twitch. And people are like, well, they're just trying to make money. Well, no shit, they're trying to make money. That's what they do. So I'm not even saying Twitch is wrong there. But what I am saying is that embedding yourself into a specific service or to a specific platform like this is bad for your brand to a degree. Because there are some people like where if YouTube does something that affects their algorithm or, you know, for a specific YouTuber, that YouTuber could just flat out die. You know, Twitch makes certain changes and you are embedded into Twitch. That's what you do. You are a Twitch streamer. You can just flat out die. There's other people who not die, you know, in person, you mean die like as a brand, but you know, there's certain people, I see a lot of people who diversify what they do, right? Like, you know, they'll do a podcast and then they'll also do a stream on certain days and they'll also put YouTube videos. Like they're all over the place, you know? I mean, look at like Rooster Teeth. They don't rely on YouTube or Twitch. You know, they have their own platform, and that's why they're extremely stable.
Right.
You know, same thing with, isn't it Giant Bomb? Same thing. Like they have their own platform. They don't rely on YouTube or Twitch.
Well, I think you need to get to a certain size where you can have the technical expertise behind you to do that. You can't kind of come out of the gate with that, at least not. Not unless you know what you're doing and you know, you're probably not a neophyte.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. But I think the average person, like, you know, it's still better to diversify where you are or what platforms you kind of sit on, so that people, you know, just in case one kind of goes down, you know, they can find your stuff on another platform, you know?
As podcasters, we're lucky. I mean, you know, like, yeah, we do stream to Twitch on some of our shows, but you know, that's not our primary thing. We kind of do that adjunct to the podcast, which we just put out through an RSS feed into the podcatchers. And the RSS is not any proprietary system that's tied like that. It's like an open platform.
It's the last bastion.
Right. Exactly. The last bastion. Exactly. And I just wonder if maybe what we need is some sort of RSS for video that not, you know, that you can put your video out there in a way that allows then, you know, any service to catch it. Because I mean, yeah, we benefit from being on iTunes, but we're not married to iTunes, you know, we're on all, you know, through iTunes, we're on a bunch of different podcatchers. And you know, if that might be a problem if iTunes ever cuts that out, but then still, like, other podcatchers can just catch us off the RSS feed. We just go out into the internet and then, you know, we get picked up wherever. So
you can put video on RSS now.
But I get, you can't, can you live, you can't live stream through RSS.
No, you cannot. You cannot live stream through RSS, but you can stream. You can't, I mean, technically speaking, you can put a live stream link into RSS or at least into XML.
But you still have to be live streaming somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So, but yeah, I mean, you can put video on RSS right now, but yeah, I mean, yeah, it is the video. I mean, not video, but RSS is the last bastion of platform agnosticism. Am I saying that? I'm saying that wrong. Sorry.
I'm thinking, like, you know, like, why don't we build some kind of free streaming service that is platform agnostic and can be, you know, a top level thing that everybody else pulls from, and can, it'll free the masses from the slavery of a YouTube and Twitch. And but then I'm like, no, if you build a system that, like, allows you to stream, like, you're gonna want to monetize that. Why would you give that away? So, like, right there, the system is inherently biased against anything like that even spawning up. I think it's just the nature of the fact that RSS is an old technology at this point. I mean, it's proven and it's been around for quite some time that, if it was springing them now, they'd find a way to monetize it and lock it down before letting the unwashed masses revel in it.
Right. Now, if you made something like that, like, you know, well, technically speaking, RSS can already, so you can write new specs for RSS, right? Like, you can do that. I mean, iTunes does it. There's a lot of the tags that start with iTunes and they're iTunes specific, but other places read those. But iTunes can build the specifications for iTunes tags. You can build whatever you want on RSS. You can make a specification where these things work, but somebody still has to build a platform like iTunes, like Google Play Music, you know, something like, not Google Play Music, but, like, you know, like Google Podcast. Not more. Like Spotify, you know, you need, you would need a place that, like, that does those things. So it's actually twofold, you know? So, but yeah, but, you know, that, like, that's kind of like, Twitch is able to get away with this because they're the only game in town, you know? Well, I shouldn't say that. YouTube does streaming. Facebook does streaming, but nobody takes that seriously.
But it's still the three big dogs of Amazon, Google, and Facebook.
Yeah. This is why we need YouTube to get their streaming shit together so that they can actually compete against Twitch. Like, Twitch needs a competitor.
The problem is, though, that it's still the same three big dogs competing against each other in different forms. We need smaller. We need the innovators to come out and then not get gobbled up by, you know,
because the innovators are going to get gobbled up regardless.
They're going to get gobbled up.
You need at least one competitor. Look how well Microsoft is doing right now because of, you know, them getting their ass beat by PS4, by PlayStation. And I know Sony, they're not going to take this lying down, right? They're going to, don't get me wrong, they're competing now, but they can probably already see in the future how this is going to turn out, right? That they are actually, from a future perspective, they're not looking too hot against Microsoft or against the Xbox. They're going to meet that demand. I firmly believe Sony is going to meet that, you know? So
Sony's not going to take this lying down, which is why they included the base and the screw with the PlayStation.
I knew you were going to say some shit like that. I was waiting for it. So, well, let's go ahead and actually let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about Twitch's daddy, Amazon. And Amazon, they patented a method of grouping toxic players together when they play online. This is also an article from GamesIndustry.biz. It says Amazon has devised a potential solution to toxic players spoiling multiplayer games for others by making them only play against each other. A new patent filing spotted by Protocol Details, Amazon Technologies proposal for a system that allows behavior-aware player selection for multiplayer electronic games. Originally filed in 2017, but recently approved. It was originally filed in 2017. It was recently approved by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And I'll just read a couple pieces from the trademark. It says, from the patent, it says, While players may enjoy competing with other players of similar skill levels, such systems naively assume that skill is the primary and only factor in players' enjoyment. Contrary to this assumption, players' enjoyment may depend heavily on based on behaviors of other players with which they are paired, such as the proclivity of other players to use profanity or engage in undesirable behaviors. Players who engage in such behaviors may be labeled as toxic by other players. One mechanism for dealing with such players is to isolate all toxic players into a separate player pool, such that one toxic player is paired with another toxic player, or only paired with other toxic players. The filing acknowledges that this is difficult to come up with a clear definition of toxic, and that classifying players as only toxic or non-toxic ignores the other important differences in player preferences. For example, some players may be comfortable with bad language but consider quitting prematurely as toxic, while others may be comfortable with opponents quitting but view their profanity as toxic. The filing suggests allowing players to select preferences for what they do and do not find acceptable, and then grouping players together based on these affinities. So, after all that, first of all, what are you doing this for, Amazon? Because last I heard, your last venture with the Crucible, which would be something that this would be applied to, didn't work out too great. So I don't know, maybe they're working on something else and they might apply it there. But then again, I don't think toxic is the right word here. Like, I think toxic is the incorrect word they're using here, right? Like, if you're somebody who thinks that just cursing or using profanity in general is toxic, that's not toxicity in games. That's just there. Somebody's using profanity and you don't like it. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to downplay that. If they have a system where you can play with people who do not use profanities at all, then go for it. How they manage that is a different story, because it's like now you're kind of putting the onus on the developer to be able to manage that player group and say, oh, somebody's using profanity in a non-profanity, you know, group. Ban, or you know, that I just don't see that being realistic. You know,
does Ned Flanders even play Fortnite?
I don't know. Well, because of Fortnite, they might have Ned Flanders in it already. Who knows? I mean, toxicity in games is usually like if somebody is using profanity at you, like not even profanity, but if they're just being hostile towards you, that can be toxicity. People leaving early, that can be toxic. People throwing games, you know, or picking having throw picks, like pick characters they know will not work, or using a character incorrectly. That's all toxic things. Go ahead. Yeah,
I think that they're using toxic to basically is a very broad, like, catch-all term. And it's basically like anytime you encounter somebody randomly online that does something that you don't want to play with somebody that does that. And, you know, that can be, like we said, profanity to everything that you just mentioned about your actual behavior in the game. And I think, I mean, on paper, and I guess as far as a patent goes, it's pretty much all just on paper. I mean, this makes sense. It's like, okay, yeah, like let's find out exactly, you know, like, let's not just go off skill, because that's kind of the simple way to go. I guess what we talk about, like, skill or basically like ping, or like the two ways to, like, you know, emphasize how you want to match players up in these types of games. But like the concept of, like, yeah, like, let's, like, really sit down and break down, like, what do people want in, you know, for lack of a better term, like a gaming partner, like when they're in a match, like what kind of people do they want to be up against? What's the most engaging for them? And yeah, if you're going to go up against somebody that's not, you know, that you feel is cheating or just not playing the game right, like that's going to affect that. And if they can take that information, and I think that's the hardest part, is gathering that information. Once you build your database of how everybody acts and all that, then it's just, you know, then you can go through and tweak your algorithm for matching everybody until you're, you know, somewhere satisfactory. I'd almost say that they should, you know, this is the kind of thing I'd like to see where, if, you know, like before you could, you know, sign up for an online service, like before you sign into Fortnite or Overwatch or something, like you fill out a survey, like, do you think like leaving early is okay? Like, you know, and then like let people like self-report, and then you could at least play, you know, have the data, then play with it. Although I'm sure some people would lie. And so then you'd also have to rely on like other people reporting, like, did, you know, the people that you played with live up to their reputations or whatever. But then again, like, how often do gamers really want to get involved? You don't want to have to sit there and like fill out a paperwork, you know, report after every match just to, you know, so to make sure the system's working. So that'd have to be on some kind of like limited, you know, presumably volunteer basis. But I mean, it's an interesting idea. I'd like to see this. I'd like to see this in the wild. You know, Fall Guys tried something like this where they took all the cheaters and they put them together in separate matches. And then the problem was the cheaters all realized that they were all stuck together and they would stream the matches and then people would see that, oh my God, look at all these, like everybody's cheating in this game. Why would I want to play it? And they were like, well, now you're ruining the reputation of the game. We can't do this anymore. You know, thanks for doing that. But I mean, there's an idea here. I mean, I suppose it's worth patenting. I mean, that's the other thing too, is maybe nothing comes of Amazon Game Studios. Maybe they don't get a single game off the ground, but they develop a bunch of tech that they can then, you know, like license to other companies to actually do cool stuff with. And maybe they've got other patents that we don't know about yet that, they might've worked up that, we'll see the light of day someday.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, there's certain actions that you know are toxic. I don't give a fuck. Leaving a game early is toxic, period. Like, you know, leaving a game early, that's why, like, it should be frowned upon all the time. And don't get me wrong, obviously there are reasons for people leaving games early. And I'm not talking about someone who just gets disconnected. You know, I'm talking about somebody who actually hits that quit button. You know, like, you know, there are reasons for that. But at the same time, there's a reason why people don't do it. Like, if you know you only have 10 minutes to play a game that's going to be 30 minutes, you don't hop into the game because you don't have time. You know, that's gamer etiquette right there. You don't do it.
At the very least, if you have kids, you should only be playing with other people who have kids because you might get called away at any moment.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know these things already. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. My thing is, I just think they use the wrong word here. Toxic is not the right word for the technology they're trying to build. They're trying to build player. They're trying to build a system where players that have the same values pretty much play together, you know, but it also engaging such a system or setting up such a system puts a lot more stress on the moderation side of the game, which developers refuse to give communities the tools to deal with and then kind of don't want to deal with it themselves, you know? So I think that can only make things worse, because if you have something where you can say, oh, well, I don't want to play with anybody who uses profanity, somebody, some asshole's going to say that too and then use a ton of profanity. That's what they're going to do, you know, because people are assholes like that. So, but yeah, that's what Amazon, like I said, this is, I don't know what they're going to apply it to, because it's damn sure ain't Crucible. You know.
Well, I just hope that they don't get a DMCA notice for, you know, using the word toxic so much.
I don't think that's gonna how that's gonna never mind, Nick. I'm gonna leave it alone. Okay, well, that's gonna do it for us this week. Officially, I said that last time, but then that statement wasn't true because we recorded a whole nother goddamn podcast, you know, later in the week. But that will do it for us this week. Next week, what are we gonna have? Well, we're gonna have a new Clan of Three, a new Sit Rep Happy Hour. We're gonna have a new Warcraft Reloaded for WoW Classic. And by the way, if you didn't hear about Clan of Three before, that is our Mandalorian podcast. So that's going to be going on during the Mandalorian season. We're going to have a new Double Tap, which is for the fighting game community, a new Dropping Spicy for the Apex Legends community, a new Wondrous Tales, and a new, which is for our Final Fantasy 14 podcast, and then Torn the Goblin, which is one of our World of Warcraft podcasts. That's our story and lore podcast for World of War. This guy, Nick Zolankevich, is on that show as well. And I would like to thank you guys for listening. Nick, why don't you tell me where they can find you?
You can find me at Twitter. I'm at WookieBH. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network, as Jarrett mentioned, on the Torn and the Goblin. This week, Katie and I will be talking about Terror by Torchlight, the short story that sets up the Exploring Eastern Kingdoms book, and also the pre-patch cinematics that we got, in particular talking about the Nathanos cinematic. And you can also find me, as Jarrett mentioned, on Clan of Three. I do the recaps, so check that out. And then also you can find me on WoW Talk, our World of Warcraft guild and news show. That is not this week, so check that out next week.
Yeah. And you can find me at Joshtradamus on Twitter, and you can also find me streaming on twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons definitely every Friday while we play GTFO. And I think I streamed a couple extra times this week, but we're trying to make something a bit more official going forward. But we'd love to have you join our Discord too, which is mash.gg/discord, and you can join our community there and talk to myself, Nick, and the other hosts of the network. And you know, we encourage you guys to reach out with comments and questions. So, you know, you can do so on the Discord, which is you know, like I said, mash.gg/discord, or you can do so via Twitter, or you can do so you know, via email, which is contact@mash.gg. If you enjoy the show and you want to share the show with others, you can do that by you know, sharing the show with others. I was gonna say, if you want to help us out, but you can also share the show with others. That's the best way to help us out. And to rate and review our show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. And if you want to take your support a bit further, you can do so on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month. You can gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. We also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And we do have Twitch subscriptions available on twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons if you want to become a Twitch subscriber and help us out there. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And with that, like I said, we are done for the week. Thank you guys very much. Catch you next week.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/discord.